Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Movie Nights Roundtable. It's been a minute. How are you?
It has been. I've been chilling. How about you?
Good. You have a nice trip?
I did. It was a lot of fun. I went to the island from the Banshees of Inisherin.
Yes, you actually did. That's not a joke.
I did. I found the fingers. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is cool. I'm glad to have you back.
Good to be back. Yes. I'm glad I didn't miss a lot of major stories.
Wah, wah, wah. We did. And thank you guys so much for being here. Without further ado, we're going to dive into the stories. But before we get into the actual stories, there's something really quick I want to bring up. Stephen Moffat's writing a new Doctor Who episode.
Oh,
Stephen Moffat's writing a new Doctor Who episode.
That has been confirmed.
I'm so... God, I'm so excited.
Is it for this upcoming season? Like, it's already been confirmed, written, and shot?
Yes. So...
Okay.
There's rumors that he might do the Christmas special this year as well, just based off of a leak, which I would also love.
Yeah.
But we don't know if that's true. But he has written an episode that's already been shot and edited coming out in the new season.
Nice.
Beyond excited.
That's very good.
Yes, I agree. Anyway, getting to the real stories.
When's the last time he did anything with the show?
2017.
That was Capaldi?
Capaldi's last episode was his last episode.
Oh, shit. All right. Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Hot minute for sure.
Poor Jody.
Big Doctor Who guy over here. Hey, listen, I thought she was great.
She was great.
Enough said.
We'll leave it at that.
Diving into the story here,
yes.
We have one from the Hollywood Reporter. Nick, what is the first headline?
Yes, in a Marvel shocker, X-Men 97 creator Bo DeMeo fired weeks before the premiere of the show. Now, the show's already premiered.
Yes.
And it's already kind of getting the ball rolling, right? You saw the first three episodes early?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, link on their channel.
There you go. Way to plug there, buddy.
Anyway, a man was fired.
Yes. Not just any man. The, showrunner of the show.
Their first showrunner.
That's funny. Okay. But yes, he was fired, and there hasn't been a reason given as to why yet, officially. I'll kind of get into it here, but I'm going to take from the Hollywood Reporter. By the way, this report came out on March 12th, so it's a bit old because we didn't do an episode last week. So when I refer to dates in the article, it's from that March 12th date. Early last week, Marvel and DeMeo suddenly parted ways. His company email was deactivated, and the cast and crew were informed he was no longer on the project. DeMeo's Instagram account, which was once a source for X-Men updates, was deleted. No reason for the firing was given. Marvel had no comment, and DeMeo's representatives did not return calls for a comment, and emails to the showrunner yielded no response. Basically, the article also goes on to mention that they were lining him up for press interviews because it was premiering that week. He was getting ready for everything and then just was fired. Now, that immediately makes people think, oh, this is probably an HR issue, not a creative differences issue, because as it's mentioned, he's already written season two.
Yeah.
Season two is already written, and they were doing loose ideas for a third season when this happened. So it kind of becomes what happened then. Like, this is very out of nowhere, because
mm-hmm.
he's not just worked on this show. He wrote a little bit for Moon Knight. He did one of the drafts of Blade with Mahershala Ali. Like, what?
Yeah, it seems like he's been... kind of a
yeah that he's been kind of in that
guy
family.
Yeah.
And while no official reason has been given, the first theory that came out is that he has an OnlyFans account. Working for Disney can be seen as a little, you know. Now, people also quickly pointed out that his OnlyFans is not that explicit, one,
yeah.
And two, he had that way before he was hired by Disney, so it's something they had to have known about.
Yeah,
so that's unlikely. And while it was mentioned in what I'm about to bring up, Jeff Snyder in his newsletter, which I'm a big fan of the Insider newsletter, he had mentioned all he had heard from his sources was, while there were some Disney people who thought that the OnlyFans was weird, it really didn't have anything to do with his firing, it more became the lines of, I'm paraphrasing from his newsletter, he was just a nightmare to deal with and was just very difficult to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But that also seems funny considering he worked on so many things. So what I'm wondering is, was he difficult to work with and he said the thing or did the thing that just crossed the line and it was like, nope, that's it, you're done?
Yeah.
Was this an ongoing thing? I think as the show starts to premiere, like, and get more episodes out there, like, we'll start to learn what exactly happened. The thing that's weird to me is that he deleted his Instagram as well.
I'm sure he'll end up doing some sort of long form interview or something, break it down, and then Disney will probably have to
do something with it too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm very curious to see what happened there. But again, we don't know if the nightmare report is real. That's just what Jeff Snyder's sources have heard. it's just interesting to say the least that you don't see this happen that often. Like, typically, if someone's fired, it's you figure out pretty quick.
Well, also, it coming out of nowhere. Like, he worked on the draft of Blade. He did episodes of Moon Knight. So if that behavior was already there, like, I doubt it just all of a sudden came out from the X-Men show.
Exactly, yeah. This is pure, just me being pure speculation right here. I wonder if he just said something to Feige, and Feige was like, oh, hell no. And, like, that was it. Like, I don't know. That's just me being a shithead.
Some power trip, like, well, this is my show, and Kevin Feige being like, oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it your show?
Yeah. Like, I wonder. I'm just curious. My brain's just going for, like, what happened, because we don't know. We don't know what happened. But we're going to be following this as more news comes out about it. I just found it interesting. Anything else that you want to add?
No, that's about it.
Yeah. It makes your brain go like, huh, what happened there?
Yeah, and it's funny because you would not expect this level of, like, not controversy, but just news and everything, like, just coming out of an animated.
Yeah.
A animated revival of a show. Like, I feel like that.
It just seems odd.
Everything just seemed very blown out of proportion.
Yeah. Because I almost feel like if he was fired over something that wasn't a big deal, like, let's say it was the OnlyFans.
Yeah.
He would come out pretty quickly and start being like, this is bullshit. They fired me because of this. You know,
which,
like,
they knew about.
Yeah. So, like, I wonder. The fascinating thing is the Instagram being deleted. That's what fascinates me.
That's weird, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really wondering what happened there. Mm-hmm. Regardless, what do you guys think about Beau DeMayo, however you pronounce it, being fired from X-Men 97, literally the week that the show was about to premiere? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. And Nicholas, explain why Dalton will be happy now.
Well, it's because Scream 7 is back on track.
Yep.
And Neve Campbell is officially returning.
You're goddamn right she is.
And they have a new director.
Yes, they do. And look, it's an interesting choice, but I'm going to throw on some more tinfoil hats as we do this as well. Mm-hmm. So there is the good news, bad news of Neve Campbell coming back. I think it's great news, one, because, buddy, you know, she got paid. She got paid.
They just gave her what she originally asked for, plus the salary of everyone who left.
Yeah, no, like, what probably happened is, like, they had to be desperate after, you know, Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega are no longer involved. And look, I'm not a fan of the circumstances regarding their exit, by the way. Mm-hmm. Not at all. I think it's kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. Am I happy that Neve Campbell's returning? Absolutely. But I've also seen some, like, connotations online of, like, oh, we should be upset with Neve Campbell for using this. It's like, Neve Campbell's an actress who got paid. If you want to be mad at Spyglass, I'll be mad at Spyglass with you. I'm very mad that they did this. Am I going to take that out on Neve Campbell because she said yes to a job? No. Mm-hmm. Not at all. That's how I personally feel about it. Mm-hmm. But also, what intrigues me about this is the director they have is Kevin Williamson. Kevin Williamson was the writer of Scream 1, Scream 2, and Scream 4, and was executive producing 5 and 6. He's only directed one feature film, which I've never seen, but by all accounts, was not a great movie. But if you dive into the history of that movie, they also had to completely change a lot of it because the Columbine Massacre happened around the same time, and it was involving, the original storyline was, like, involved killing a teacher. So they, like, had to completely scrap and
revamp
do it. Yeah. So, interesting story there. I do want to watch the movie eventually. Mm-hmm. Now, here's my concern. My concern is, as we know from what previously happened with the other cast, Spyglass, pretty shady to deal with. Could this be a situation where, like Matthew Vaughn was talking about when he was the director of X-Men 3 for a while, he talks about this in his press for Argyle. He came across a script for X-Men 3 that had this opening scene where, like, Storm saved a village of people in Africa using her powers. And he was like, oh, wow, like, I'm the director. I haven't seen this draft. Like, where's the storyboards and stuff? Like, what's going on here? And the studio was like, oh, no, that's Halle Berry's script. And he was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, she hasn't signed on yet because she wants to do more for the character of Storm. So we wrote this so that she signs on. And when she does, we're going to throw it away. Mm. And that made Matthew Vaughn go, well, I don't want to be a part of this movie. And he quit.
Yeah.
So what I'm worried about here, since Kevin Williamson has not directed much, he's written a ton. And he was the creator of Dawson's Creek, a very famous show.
Mm-hmm.
What worries me here is they're using Kevin Williamson to kind of get her to come back, and then when she's now back, they're gonna get a new director. Now, the good news is Kevin Williamson has spoken up saying, like, yep, I'm directing the movie, so that makes me feel a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time,
But do, what is the, just because he was involved early on, do you think that's was part of Neve Campbell's appeal to returning?
I think so, because
I feel like it would just be salary based.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I think it's a couple things based. One, it's salary based. Two, she's not coming back to feature in this movie. I bet you she's the fucking lead again.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you she is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Like, that's why you come back. That's why Kevin Williamson, the creator of the franchise, directs the movie, is because Sydney's back. Sydney's front and center.
Yeah.
There's a theory that I love that I'd like to run by you.
Go on.
What if this is Scream's version of New Nightmare? Meaning, Scream was a franchise that Wes Craven famously directed for a while until he passed away. The only other Nightmare on Elm Street movie he directed was New Nightmare, which is a movie in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise where all the cast comes back, but they're all playing themselves. They're not playing Sidney Prescott. They're not playing Heather Lancup's character. Like, Heather Lancup's playing Heather Lancup.
Ah.
Robert Englund's playing Robert Englund. And the plot of that movie is Freddy gets into the real world. So I've floated the theory of, like, for how meta Scream is, what if it's a real-life Ghostface is going after Neve Campbell, Matthew Lillard,
Ulrich,
and, like, that's the plot of the movie.
That's how you get them back.
Yeah. I don't think that's what's happening, but it's a fun thought, and it's a tribute to Wes Craven as well, like, that going after New Nightmare.
That would be quite interesting.
Yes, they won't do it, but I thought it was a fun theory.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, what are your thoughts on Neve Campbell coming back? Do you think fans should be upset with her? And do you think Kevin Williamson will, in fact, direct this movie?
I'm excited she's coming back. I think that amidst all the controversy and everything, it's kind of a touchy subject with what happened. But I don't think that, like, clearly they're taking a full creative overhaul with it, where the stars left, the directors left, you know, so it is a new thing entirely.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's someone stepped in
mm-hmm.
and is, like, replacing something. It is just a fundamentally new project. That being said, it is sad to see Jenna Ortega and Melissa Barrera leaving.
Yeah,
I think Kevin Williamson. I think he will end up directing in the long run. I think that they don't want any more bad press or PR relating to this movie. So I think then firing yet another director or something is just not going to be a good look for it.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I want to point out the writer of this film is the producer of the Radio Silence films. It's either Gary Busick or Guy Busick. I think it's a guy. It's one of those.
Okay.
He is now the writer of the film, mm-hmm. which I find it odd that Kevin Williamson's not writing the film. That really surprised me.
That's weird. You would think he would just write and direct it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But regardless, there's still some connection to that with that producer now writing the script.
Yeah.
Because he did work well with
Radio Silence. Oh, like, I'm sure everything's going to still stay canonical.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you are right in that they were just like, all right, what do we do now? And I feel like this could hopefully be a killer installment of this franchise. And I'm looking forward to it, regardless.
Just put them on a ski slope with skis.
That's all you've ever wanted.
All I ask of this fucking franchise.
That's all you've ever wanted is Ghostface on skis.
That is accurate.
Okay. What do you guys think about Neve Campbell returning for Scream 7? Are you excited? Do you think it's a good idea? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story is sort of a double whammy of the DC universe here.
Yes,
the first part of it comes from Deadline, and that is the Batman 2 from Matt Reeves has shifted release dates and has now been delayed a year and is coming out in fall of 2026.
God damn it.
And the next part of that comes to us from The Hollywood Reporter, in that a Teen Titans live-action movie is officially a go at DC Studios.
God praise it.
Yes.
It's kind of a good news, bad news scenario here.
Let's start with the Batman 2, shall we?
Listen. Am I sad? Yes. Am I understandable because they want the film to be great and I should just patiently wait? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I wish more movies would do stuff like this than try to hit release dates unprepared.
Yes.
The Batman movie is great.
Yes.
And part of the reason why it's great is because of how well-crafted it is with the sets, the virtual production, everything. And I want them to do it again. So take your time, guys. Like, it's okay.
And listen, there's, you know, we're going to be back in that world very quickly with the Penguin.
Yes.
Coming out.
Which will
kind of
hold
year.
Us over. Yeah.
So I feel like it really is not that, you know, at least we're getting something there. And from trailer, at least, the Penguin looks great.
I like the trailer.
Colin Farrell was great in the first Batman.
Yeah.
I have no, you know, I expect great things from the show. So at least, we, you know, it's not like, oh, we have to wait 5 years before we actually get into this universe again. You know, yeah. There is something coming, which I think is good.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And going into the Teen Titans movie.
Yes.
That's a bit exciting.
Now, is this a official James Gunn DCU project?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, per the Hollywood Reporter, the screenwriter who's also writing Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, Anna Nagira, I want to say is how you pronounce your name. Sorry if I did it wrong. Has now been tapped to write Teen Titans for DC Studios to be a part of the DCU. So that's really fun. We don't know when that movie will take place in the Gods and Monsters Chapter 1, if it even is in Chapter 1. This could just be a very early idea that's been planted. We're not going to hear anything about it because James Gunn is quite busy filming Superman.
Oh, yes.
So
also, none of them are gods or monsters.
Yes, that is correct. I'm hoping that we find out more about this as Superman wraps up production, as Comic-Con comes around, as we learn more stuff. Like, maybe we get news and an official announcement from DC about this. But either way, I'm excited.
Over under 60% chance Jenna Ortega's Raven.
I'll take the under.
Under, okay.
Yeah, no, I think she likes to be a producer on movies now, mm-hmm. and shows now. And I don't think they'll let that happen at DC, and then that will decrease her interest. They'll pay her the money. That's not.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not the worry. But we'll see. Listen, I'd like to be wrong. I think it's cool casting, but mm-hmm. I just don't think it'll happen. But
it just seems like a role she would be,
of course,
cast in.
Yeah, but I also don't think she wants to pigeonhole herself either.
No, 100%. Yeah,
because like Beetlejuice and Wednesday, that's kind of, you know.
Yeah,
I think that she is going to start doing, like, she's done some great indie dramas as well, like the is it The Fallout? Is that what that movie's called she did for HBO?
The school shooting one?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good movie. She's great in that. And I love her stuff in indie horror too, like X is great. Her Scream movies were great. So, you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I wanted to Jenna Ortega tangent there. But listen, I'm excited. Teen Titans are really fun. I'm curious as to who they're going to cast and how that's going to work.
Yeah, that's definitely an ensemble movie, so it'll be curious.
And while I am sad about the Batman 2, mm-hmm. I understand it. Yeah. I will look at me in the face. I will be 30 years old when the Batman 2 comes out.
Oof.
I hate everything about what I just said. I just want you to know I hated everything about
30 years
that.
Old and still seeing Batman movies.
Hey, listen, till I'm fucking 90. Watch me keep going. But
can I go down a rabbit hole real quick on the Penguin series while we're talking about Batman?
Absolutely, you can.
I found something out and I text you about it, and it doesn't make any fucking sense. And that is that Mark Strong, the actor, you know, the Kingsman movies, Sinestro,
Sherlock Holmes,
Dr. Savannah, and Shazam. He's listed on the cast on IMDb for the Penguin series, and not only is he listed on the cast, he's listed as Carmine Falcone, who's played by John Turturro in the Batman movie, and who, spoilers alert, is dead. So do you think that's just some weird thing? Do you think we're going to get a flashback and they're just recasted him? Because I have a theory.
I want to hear your theory before I give my opinion. Go on.
It was heavily rumored that Clayface is going to be in the Batman 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the Penguin show is about him filling the vacuum left by the death of Carmine Falcone. But what happens when Carmine Falcone is still there? And I think that's going to be a lead into the second movie.
That'd be cool. I like that. I think Mark Strong isn't playing Carmine Falcone at all. And someone on IMDb just had fun. That's what I think.
It's also possible.
It could be. Maybe he's not even in it. That'd be
fun. Realistic.
But hey, listen. It happens. IMDb is great for movies that are and TV shows that are already out.
Yep.
Anything leading up, fool's game. But
how do? Oh, I guess it wouldn't be on Letterboxd because well, it's a limited series.
Is it? Maybe it is for now. You know.
Hold on. Now you have me intrigued. Yeah, I'm not seeing the Penguin on here yet. Be on the lookout for that.
Yes, but
those are my thoughts.
Yeah, and I appreciate them. But what do you guys think? Are you sad about the Batman 2 being delayed? Are you happy about Teen Titans? Maybe it's the opposite. Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Variety, and boy, is this a filmmaker who definitely people don't have strong opinions on, and that is that Rian Johnson.
Why would people have strong opinions on Rian Johnson?
Who's to say?
Who's to say?
People are really passionate about Knives Out 2.
You know what? I think that's it. I think you're right. I think that's the cause of the discourse.
He and his team have signed a two-picture deal with Warner Brothers.
Oh.
Now, what's interesting about this is he currently has a deal with Netflix.
Correct. Where he has to finish one more Knives Out movie for Netflix. And I'll take it on here because I want to point out Ryan's quote when commenting on this deal. Mike and Pam, referring to DeLuca and Abdi, the leaders of theatrical at Warner Brothers, Mike and Pam's renewed commitment to original storytelling and the theatrical experience make Warner Brothers Discovery an ideal place to help us bring the filmmakers we'd love to be audiences around the world on a grand scale. We're thrilled to have them as partners. To me, this is a backhanded shot at Netflix saying, like, fuck you guys. Like, we tried to go theatrical with you, and we did very well for the Knives Out movie that was out for a week. It did very well for a 1 week,
yes,
like, theatrical run. And then they were like, nope. And every financial person in Hollywood was like, they left so much money on the table by not putting it in theaters longer. Like, what? Why did they do that? And it's like, and I feel like in their, I don't know this, I'm speculating, I feel like in the initial deal with Rian Johnson for Netflix, they kind of implied, like, oh yeah, we'll talk about theatrical. And the kind of, listen, Rian Johnson got his fucking money. Mm-hmm. He got paid for those movies. I'm talking paid. And he deserves it. He got his Netflix money. He made those Netflix movies. Good for you. I'm sure we'll hear more news about Knives Out 3 soon. But he's immediately getting out of there after Knives Out 3.
What's interesting about this, right, is this tracks with everything we've said on the show previously about Warner Brothers Discovery really trying to attract top-level talent back to the studio.
While also pissing them off.
While also pissing them off. But it's also funny, just this, like, case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
Where it's really funny that Rian Johnson was at Netflix and is like, nah, I'm done with this. Let's go to Warner Brothers. And then Warner Brothers is like, hey, Zack Snyder, go fuck yourself. And Netflix is like, hey, bud, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, that's fine. Come over here.
So it is. It's very interesting to see how pick and choose the studio. I mean, thoughts on Rian Johnson versus Zack Snyder as directors is a different
debate.
Topic altogether. Yeah. But it is just funny to see that.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious. And like, I'm curious to see what happens out of this, because it's not just Rian Johnson, it's his production company.
Yeah.
So no, it's even for movies that he wants to produce.
Exactly, yeah.
So I find that very interesting, and I'm curious to see what kind of movies he brings to the theatrical table on that. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious, and the reason why I paused for a second there is you said, like, oh, you know, Zack Snyder versus Rian Johnson, that's a different debate, and I literally thought about, like, oh my god, the YouTube comments. like, if we made a video about, like, compare, like, who's better? I would have nightmares just thinking about
it. It would be awful. Honestly, we should do it.
Oh, God. If you want to see it, let us know, please. Oh, Jesus. I just opened a can of worms.
Yeah, now you've done it.
Oh, but anyway, guys, what do you think about Rian Johnson and Ram Bergman and their production company signing a two-picture deal with Warner Brothers Discovery? Let us know as we move on to our final news topic story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Oh, man, this is sort of a major one, and it's spread out across Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. But basically, long story short, there's a giant proxy fight happening for control of Disney.
Yes, there is.
And in a very interesting one, which has the internet in a bit of a tizzy.
Yeah,
George Lucas has come out and backed Disney CEO, current CEO, Bob Iger, amid this proxy fight with a quote that is straight out of something Job would say on Arrested Development, and that is that
you're so right,
and that is creating magic is not for amateurs.
Yes,
I don't even know where to begin on this one, so I'm gonna hand it off to you.
Oh, I'll begin. So many. Oh no, hold on. Fuck, I fucked up the Star Wars quote. But like when Alderaan gets destroyed and Obi-Wan says it's as if thousands of voices cried out suddenly and then were silenced all at once. That's how I feel about YouTube channels with George Lucas supporting Bob Iger. All those dipshit YouTube channels that are like, ah, Disney woke this, Bob Iger this, Kathleen Kennedy this. George Lucas comes out and says, I'm voting for Bob Iger. Fuck you guys. I'm the biggest individual shareholder of Disney.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere without Bob Iger. And if you read his quote in Variety, he's
George Lucas and I have in common. Disney shareholders.
Fuck yeah.
No one's asked me for my vote.
And they should. They should. So, but like, if you listen, if you read it, it goes on where he's just like, yep, nope, I was worried when he left. I was happy when he's back. I love Bob Iger. I made money. It's kind of his whole thing. And I love it. And look, this also just goes to show that most people on the internet, us included, don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And it's just like, how many thumbnails have you seen, Nicholas, of people saying like, oh, George Lucas hates Disney and blah, 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 all this stuff.
I mean, listen, I haven't made it yet, but very possibly our own.
But it's one of those like, of course this is what he said.
Yeah.
You know, like anyone with a brain kind of realizes, of course this is what he said. Now, for those wondering about the proxy fight, Nelson Peltz is kind of the one going against Bob Iger, and a recent shareholder firm, ISS did back Nelson Peltz in that proxy fight, and also on his side is Ike Perlmutter. Guys, don't let Ike Perlmutter take control of Disney. For the love of God, you don't want that. I say guys as if our viewers, all 12 of them, like have control over over this decision. Basically, what I'm saying is, if Ike Perlmutter becomes in charge of Disney, bad things are coming.
I mean, what it seems to me is that Disney has made a lot of changes to their board recently, just mm-hmm. on a whole.
Yes.
And it seems that the consensus for this proxy fight with everything is them being like, yeah, we made all these changes, but Bob Iger is still the old regime.
Yeah.
Which kind of seems to be what is happening.
And I also think they're kind of blaming, basically, Bob Iger is a risk taker. Mm-hmm. Risks don't always pan out, which is why you've seen even him come out and say, like, we're going to cut back on Marvel. We're going to be smarter financially about these things. But a lot of the risks he had paid off. But I think since, you know, a lot of people in this business, especially with money, are short-sighted, it's just like, meh, they haven't been as successful as I thought. Meh, let's get rid of the whole thing. And it's like, no, we've already taken steps to fix the problems that came when I was gone. Mm-hmm. It takes a couple years to fix. Doesn't happen overnight, and Bob Iger's not going to cancel movies for tax write-offs. I mean, at least not that we know about. I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have. But not big, high-profile projects that we know about. And I think there are just people who want to go back to like the way Disney was ran in like the 90s, which is not horrible, but it's not amazing. You know, it was a lot of
cocaine and 3D animation.
There you go. But even Michael Eisner came out recently and said he was in support of Iger. And something that I think will help Bob Iger is all of the Walt Disney family members, even the one that's very critical of Bob Iger, came out and said, like, don't let Nelson Peltz, don't let that happen.
So is it Nelson Peltz wants to be CEO? Is that the...
It kind of the chairman of the board. Just kind of wants to overthrow the powers there.
Gotcha.
And yeah. It's a whole shenanigans that are going on.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah. But I think the George Lucas endorsement is big. For the shareholders.
I mean, if he's the largest shareholder, then yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. I have no idea when, like, the vote is to end it. I have no clue. But it is interesting, to say the least. And, of course, George Lucas backed Bob Iger. Come on, guys. Use your brain.
Creating magic's not for amateurs, Michael.
Dude, as soon as you said that at the beginning, I was like, that's so something that Job would say. By the way, Lucas's full quote was, creating magic is not for amateurs. When I sold Lucasfilm just over a decade ago, I was delighted to become a Disney shareholder because of my longtime admiration for its iconic brand and Bob Iger's leadership. When Bob recently returned to the company during a difficult time, I was relieved. No one knows Disney better. I remain a significant shareholder because I have full faith and confidence in the power of Disney and Bob's track record of driving long-term value. I have voted all of my shares for Disney's 12 directors and urge other shareholders to do the same. So... full endorsement.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. We'll talk about the story more as it develops. But what do you guys think about this proxy fight going on at Disney? And do you think, or I should say, are you surprised that George Lucas kind of supported Bob Iger in that way? Let us know as we move on to the box office.
The box office.
There were no predictions last week because there was no show last week.
No, but let me get my notes out so I can write down our new ones.
Yes.
All right. But if you want to go ahead and rattle off those top five.
I will. Coming in first, and again, these are the Sunday estimates. We'll have the final Monday numbers in the description below. Coming in first, making $45.2 million, was Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Hell yeah.
Coming in second, dropping 38% from week 3 to week 4, was Dune Part 2, making $17.6 million.
Nice, nice.
Coming in third, dropping 44% from week 2 to week 3, was Kung Fu Panda 4 at $16.8 million.
Ooh.
Coming in fourth at a $5 million opening for Neon in its opening weekend, $5.3 million was Immaculate, the new Sydney Sweeney horror movie. And coming in fifth, Arthur the King, dropping 43% from week 1 to week 2. It's a great drop, making $4.3 million. And coming in just in sixth place was Late Night with the Devil, making $2.8 million. I'm going to do a couple deep dives on this really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Worldwide right now is a total of $61 million on a budget of $100. So it's at about 0.6. It's got some while to go. It's really going to be told in the drops of this movie on if it's going to be profitable or not. But I wouldn't sneeze at the $45 million opening. It's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. Doom Part 2 has now made $574 million worldwide. It's probably going to cross $600 this week.
Nice.
Great for that movie. It's made over three times its budget, and Doom Messiah will come out, just not as soon as we want it to.
Oh, yeah.
Kung Fu Panda 4 has made $268 million on a budget of what I believed was $85. So it's already made 3.2 times its budget back. I didn't love the movie, but hey, good for DreamWorks making that shmoney.
Profitability is profitability.
Yes, it is. Immaculate only has the 5.3 total because it has not come out worldwide yet, but I believe it was made on a budget of around 9. Mm. So I think it's fair to say it'll end up making its money.
I think so.
Arthur the King has made only $14 million. It's only come out domestically, though. I don't know the budget of that. Let me see if I can find it. So Arthur the King was made for $19 million. Mm-hmm. So it's made $14. It's about at the budget. It has a little bit more to go, but we'll see. And Late Night with the Devil opened worldwide, I should say, has $2.8 million. Let me see what that budget was. It couldn't have been high.
What's interesting about it is I feel like I've heard a lot about Immaculate, and I've heard a lot about Late Night at the Devil. It's crazy that they're opening as low as they are, because I feel like horror usually does come out of the gate swinging. Like, I'm really shocked that both of these didn't have, like, 10 mil plus openings.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised. Late Night with the Devil was shot, like, 2.5 years ago, and they've been trying to get distribution in IFC films.
Yeah.
Kind of helped them. And then Immaculate was Neon. And also, while possession horror isn't does well, it's also because it's based in sort of Christianity being legit. Mm. And I've seen Immaculate. It's very good. But a lot of moviegoers can kind of get a little offended if you push the buttons of religion too much. And this movie does that.
Ah.
And so while it will attract a certain audience in its other weekends, I do think there is somewhat of a significant drop off there because horror likes to do that thing where it's scary and it's the devil, but like, don't worry, the power of God beats them.
Yeah,
it's kind of the appeal to that wider audience. But I'm looking for the budget for Late Night with the Devil. I can't find it, but there's no way it was big if IFC Films was the one who distributed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be low budget because Late Night with the Devil is IFC's largest opening weekend ever at 2.8.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah.
I'm surprised Shudder didn't come in to grab that or something.
I think it will.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very low-budget film, has made $2.8 million so far worldwide, and with positive word of mouth, I think it can increase. Although, it did use some AI images in the movie. I know that's a bit of a subject of controversy. I'm not going to get into it yet, because I haven't seen the film yet, and when I do, I will talk about it in the review, but it is something to point out.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly...
So, positive and negative word of mouth. Is
yeah.
Really, it's got an uphill battle.
It's got medium word of mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the box office. I'm going to do predictions for next week.
Yes, I'll let you go first.
Number one, Lizard Monkey, baby. Let's go. Godzilla Kong, baby. Let's go.
Lizard Monkey. I'm actually writing down Lizard Monkey.
Good, you better.
Yeah.
Number two, I'll go Ghostbusters.
Okay.
Number three, I'll do Doom Part 2. Four, I will actually go Immaculate. I think it'll have a similar...
Okay.
And then five, I'll do Kung Fu Panda 4.
Do we have confirmation that nothing else is coming out this weekend?
Leave it to me to do my predictions before checking.
I'm going to go Lizard Monkey.
Okay.
I'm going to go Ghostbusters had 50?
45.
45. Dune had 20? 17?
17.
Whew.
Nothing major.
No? Okay. Does Ghostbusters drop? No, because if Dune does a half, that's like, what, 9? I don't think Ghostbusters. Yeah, I'm going to go Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go Dune. Ain't up, fuck it. I'll go Kung Fu, and I'll go Immaculate.
Okay. Okay. We just flip 4 and 5?
Yeah, keep it interesting.
Yeah.
I think you might have a better shot here, but...
Listen, Kung Fu Panda
it's
only...
It's not fun if ours is the same.
Kung Fu Panda's had short drops. One of the only kids' movies out.
That is accurate.
Could work. Mm-hmm. Could work.
We'll see what happens.
But yes, that'll do it for today's show, guys. Please, if you're watching, thank you for subscribing and liking if you haven't done so already. And you can listen to us audio only on your favorite podcasting app of choice. And if you're audio only, please go over and subscribe and like on YouTube as well. It will really help us with bills. Nicholas, thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Good to be back.
And everyone, thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you on the next one.